Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you. It's Monday, the 17th of August. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, guarded optimism at the South Sudan peace talks in Addis Ababa as a mediator's deadline looms.
There is some hope. There is a possibility that an agreement will be signed today. The problem will come in the implementation.
Media rights groups in Ghana condemn new restrictions on visiting foreign journalists.
For me, this sort of censorship wouldn't wash. This doesn't say well about our country.
And as always on a Monday, we catch up with what's been happening to the Crossroads generation. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, has arrived in Ethiopia to take part in negotiations with his former deputy turned rival, Riek Machar, with a deadline to secure a peace deal looming today. The deadline, which is backed up by the threat of sanctions, was set by the East African Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, the regional bloc mediating the talks, which are frequently broken down. So President Kiir has arrived. What's on the agenda today in Addis Ababa? I put that question to our correspondent there, Coletta Wanjoe.
Today there's supposed to be a summit by different presidents from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development region. And at the moment, we have president from Kenya, Uhuru Kenyatta, president from Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, the prime minister of Ethiopia, Hailemariam Desalegn, and the president of Sudan is also reportedly here, Mr. Al-Bashir. So the four have been meeting for the past 3 days, actually, discussing about the issue of South Sudan. And we understand that as of yesterday, which was Sunday, there was some shuttle diplomacy that was happening, whereby the four presidents met each of the leaders. They met President Salva Kiir separately, then later met Dr. Riek Machar after. So at the moment, we are currently waiting for a summit to begin.
The deadline falls today. Is there any hope of an agreement?
There is some hope. There is some hope because so far, with the fact that the presidents met each of these leaders separately, and we understand right now President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are meeting. They have been meeting since early in the morning. That's the reports we are getting. There is some hope. There is a possibility, Mark, that an agreement will be signed today. The problem will come in the implementation, but for the sake of the international community having pushed so far and so much expectations, there is a high possibility that an agreement may be signed today.
Sanctions, including arms embargoes, asset freezes, and travel bans, could be imposed on both sides if no agreement is reached. Are those threats having any impact?
No. Generally, the sanctions have not had any impact. And people have said that in other mediations, sanctions have really had impacts or these threats. But on South Sudan, the impacts have not been there because we know that already sanctions have been slapped on some of the generals who are associated with the conflict. For instance, General Peter Gadet. However, what people are saying is the sanctions are being directed to the wrong people, people who will not have an impact. For instance, if the sanctions were directed probably to the two principals of the conflict, that is the president probably and his close people and the rebel leader, probably that would have had effect, but the sanctions are being directed to the wrong people. On the issue of, for instance, arms embargo, much as it still exists or there's a threat on that, we still have an access of arms into South Sudan. Some people are benefiting. Analysts have said people are benefiting from the arms trade and it's not really happening. So sanctions on South Sudan have not really worked, and we don't even think if they slap more sanctions it will really work unless they change the people whom the sanctions will be targeted at.
Coletta Wanjoe in Addis Ababa. Tens of thousands of people have been killed in the 20 months of fighting in South Sudan. This civil war has been marked by widespread atrocities on both sides, and more than 2 million people have been forced to leave their homes. My colleague Assumpta Latus asked Douglas Johnson, a UK-based expert on the region, whether there was any end in sight to the misery tormenting South Sudan.
Right now, with all of the statements that have been coming out of Juba and Addis Ababa and Khartoum, it looks doubtful to me that there will be an agreement. There doesn't seem to be sufficient motivation on both sides to make an agreement right now. with the disarray in the opposition and the fact that the main leaders of the opposition seem to have different objectives, Machar to return to government, Gadet and the generals to overthrow Salva Kiir unambiguously, and the government looking at the disarray in the opposition and thinking they don't have to make an agreement right now. One has to look very hard to find the pressure points to bring all of those actors to an agreement that they will hold to.
What would you suggest to be done to resolve the crisis?
I think in many ways that the government has missed a lot of opportunities in the negotiations. They haven't taken seriously the different critics. I think that what they've tried to do is to keep all critics and all opposition at arm's length so that they don't have to make a solution. This whole crisis started when the president refused to even listen to the internal critics of the SPLM, and has now come to a point where there are agreements, for instance, in Arusha, which incorporate those criticisms. There has to be a serious rethinking on the government side. Are they just thinking in terms of keeping themselves in power, or are they getting around to seriously considering what has to be done to bring their critics and the opposition into a lasting peace deal? Now, that will be easier on the political side than on the military side, but it has to be done on the political side just the same.
Douglas Johnson speaking from Oxford in the UK.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Foreign journalists planning to cover stories in Ghana might now be tempted to think twice before they pack their bags and leave home. From now on, the Ghanaian government wants all reporters from overseas to be escorted by a minder while working in the country. These restrictions have been condemned by media analysts and journalists. Some groups have already petitioned the government asking it to scrap the new rules. Isaac Kelechi in Accra has more.
West African media groups in Accra have condemned the development and subsequently petitioned the communication minister to scrap the new policy on foreign media journalists in Ghana. They have said Ghana is risking to lose its ratings on press freedom if the directive is allowed to stand. Ghanaian journalist working for Al Jazeera, Kent Mensah, is shocked by the directive.
Well, when I first heard it, I was taken aback because I thought this is clearly a draconian law. We are in a very democratic state and not in an Islamic or monarchical state. So it came as a surprise to me. And for me, this sort of censorship wouldn't wash. This doesn't say well about our country. And I think that government should consider the proposal from the Media Foundation for West Africa.
Government officials have refused to comment publicly on the matter. But a release from the Information Services Department of the Ministry of Communication stated that in recent times, some publications in foreign media had sought to tarnish the image of Ghana. Former correspondent for the BBC, Ben Efson, considers the government's reasoning unconvincing.
Well, I think it's bad. It's a setback for a democratic process. And I've said I work for the BBC under the military government of the PNDC. I never submitted my work to government for even approval. They already had it on air, already online. And I think that foreign journalists should not comply and see whether the government will throw them out.
The PNDC, Efson referred to, was a military regime led by former President Rawlings. During that era, it was criminal for the media to report and depict government in a bad way. But over a decade ago, after President Rawlings left office, the law was repealed to make the work of journalists stress-free. But the government is still without the Freedom to Information Law that prevents censorships and restrictions of journalists both local and foreign from doing their work. A member of the committee pushing for the law to be passed, Professor Kwame Kakari, is worried that both the lawmakers and political actors in the country are delaying in passing the bill.
We are not happy with the silence that the opposition parties are also showing concerning passage of the bill. It is something that is intriguing. We think the parliamentarians should pass the bill because it is to enhance democratic governance.
It is yet to be seen how government will respond to these agitations and petitions to immediately scrap the new regulations in the coming weeks.
And that was our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kelechi. Let's move to Zimbabwe now, where Parliament is about to amend the country's labour legislation in a bid to halt mass redundancies following a Supreme Court ruling. Thousands of workers have been sacked in recent months without receiving any compensation. This comes despite a recent election promise from President Robert Mugabe to create 2 million new jobs. Columbus Mafunga has more from Harare.
The new bill, which the Supreme Court ruled last month, allows employers to send their employer home empty-handed or pay a minimum retrenchment package if their contracts are terminated on 3 months' notice. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, the ZCTU, says President Robert Mugabe should have used his powers to strike off the Supreme Court ruling. Japhet Moyo is the ZCTU Secretary General.
This is no longer a labor issue when we have this thing affecting landlords because they are not going to get income because people are dismissed. When we have students being affected because they are not going to go back to school.
Zimbabwe Labor Minister Priska Mfumira last week ruled out the issue of presidential powers to protect workers from being fired without compensation.
So what they want, they would see no difference to Zimbabwe.
What they want is for the world to say there is no rule of law in Zimbabwe if a presidential decree is declared. There is nothing like that. This is an issue between the employer and employee. They now want the government to interfere. We will be summoned by organizations such as the International Labour Body. Already we have received a letter saying we are denying workers the right to demonstrate.
According to the ZCTU, more than 20,000 workers have since last month been sent home without compensations. Last week, the state-run broadcaster Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation dismissed more than a third of its close to 1,000 employees on a three-month notice. Here is Foster Dongozi commenting on this development.
It's absolute carnage. There's blood on the floor. There's madness. But I think this is a reflection of the state of the economy.
So what are you doing about it?
Because we believe that employers should not just resort to firing and expelling workers, but that they should consider other mechanisms of staying afloat, such as reducing wages, maybe reducing allowances.
The Zimbabwe government has since indicated that it wants to cut its wage bill by 40% as it consumes more than 80% of the revenue it generates. It remains to be seen if President Robert Mugabe's government will issue the three-month notice when reducing its wage bill.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. Time now for our regular Monday visit to the Crossroads Generation.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello there. You're tuned in to the fourth season of Crossroads Generation, facing new challenges.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future stands today.
This is episode 18. Marcy and Nikki have been married for some time now. They've decided to have a baby together after learning that it is possible for them to have a healthy child, even though Nikki is HIV positive. Nikki and Marcy have been keeping his status secret. Even Nikki's parents don't know about it. The relationship with them is a difficult one because Nikki's mother doesn't like Marcy. And as if all this weren't enough of a burden, Marcy recently got some unwelcome news from her good friend Tina.
I hope you won't take this badly, but Dan and I are, you know...
Dan?
Yes.
Marcy did take the news badly. She was in love with Dan once while they were still at school, but their relationship ended painfully. In today's episode, we'll also meet a couple of villains from the old days who've been keeping a low profile. One of them is Mukaraba, a former politician. He used to be corrupt and involved in illegal activities like child trafficking and prostitution. Now he's in the timber business, but he's still up to no good. The other bad guy who reappears is Kanyama, Dan's father. Kanyama used to own a gold mine in the neighboring country, Laboria. But he's not allowed to work anymore since he was convicted of using child laborers. Kanyama was trying to convince his son, Dan, who now lives in Kisimba, to come home and take over the family business.
Dad, not this again. Come on, just leave me alone, all right? I am running my own business over here and I am doing well.
Now Kanyama, that shrewd businessman, has just turned up at Kisimba Airport. Who is he meeting there? Let's find out in today's episode, Signs of Things to Come.
Moses! Moses Mukaraba. So glad to see you, my old friend.
So, Peter Kanyama. You made it, my friend.
I made it.
I didn't think you would. So many flights have been cancelled because of the bad weather. Come on. Get in the car. We have to get going before it starts pouring with rain again. So, Kanyama, what brings you to Kisimba? I thought we agreed years ago that we should never be seen to be working together.
That was when you still had political ambitions and I still controlled a business empire. Times have changed. I think it's time for our plan B.
Right. Sometimes I can't help but laugh at our governments. They think they can stop us. Yet, over the years, no one has ever suspected the real masterminds behind all the poaching and logging.
Kanyama and Mukaraba. That was a great idea we came up with all those years ago, just after we left university. Register another business, one nobody knew about. Keep it on the side for a rainy day. Well, that rainy day is certainly here. You're out of politics and my other business has been shut down. Time to check our profits.
And what profits they are. Oh my. The timber business is very profitable, my friend. Our secret company is not doing badly at all.
That's what I like to hear. But you know, it's not the only reason I'm here.
Whatever else are you up to, you old fox? Oh, it must be your prodigal son, Dan. Is it? He's still here in Kisimba, isn't he?
Why are you asking me that? I asked you to keep an eye on him.
And I am. I have a man watching him.
Good.
But tell me, my friend, why do you insist on imposing your will on him?
Because he's my son, and he's the only one I can trust. I mean, I have millions tied up in my frozen bank accounts, and since my wife and I are not allowed to run a business, I can't access that money or my assets. Dan's the only one who can. I need him to get me my money.
Ah, I see.
Congratulations, Mercy. You're pregnant.
Are you serious, Dr. Florence? It worked? So soon?
Yes, it did. Even better, your blood tests show no sign of any infection. The sickness and nausea you've been feeling are just ordinary symptoms of pregnancy. You're a perfectly healthy pregnant woman. And your baby's fine as well.
Oh my God! Thank you, Doctor. This is just wonderful. I can't wait to tell my husband. He'll be so happy. I have to go and tell him straight away. Thank you, Doctor. Goodbye. Thank you.
Hey, wait. I don't know these young people. They're so impatient.
It's so long since we last ate together. Feels good, doesn't it? Hey, Nikki, my son?
Mm-hmm.
You should visit us more often. Your mom and I miss you since you got married. Isn't that so, Janet? Well, since nobody wants to talk, I guess I'll enjoy my meal in silence.
I'm going upstairs.
Janet, Your son finally visits and you can't even spare a moment to sit and eat with him?
It's okay, Dad. I'll leave.
No, you're not going anywhere. This is your home too, and I will not...
Dad,
he doesn't have to leave, Jumbe. I will.
Why are you behaving like a child, Janet?
Dad!
What, Nikki? I'm talking to your mother.
I'm HIV positive.
I'm sorry. What?
What did you say, Nikki?
You heard me. I'm HIV positive.
Oui! I knew it! I knew there was something wrong with that Trump Mercy. I told you. I told you, Nikki. Why didn't you listen to me?
Calm down, Janet.
Don't tell me what to do, Jumbe. I'm done listening to you. Do you see now what that Trump Mercy has done to our son? She's infected him with HIV. HIV, Jumbe. Do you know what that means?
Mom, Mercy's not the one to blame.
Oh, yes, she is. And don't try to convince me otherwise.
Janet, please, just let's...
Just shut up, will you, Jumbe? Just shut up.
Janet, wait. Where are you going? It's raining out there, Janet.
I hate sitting in restaurants alone. Where is Dan? He should be here by now. Then again, the weather is terrible.
Tina.
Oh, Dan. Oh, my God. You're soaked.
It's terrible out there. The streets are all flooded and the traffic is a nightmare.
Poor you. You're cold. You need a drink. Coffee, maybe?
Yeah, that would be great.
Waiter.
Yes?
2 cups of hot coffee, please.
Okay.
Well, on the phone you said you had to know something. What is this thing that couldn't wait until the rain stopped?
Here you go.
Thank you.
So?
I told Mercy about us.
Oh. And?
She took it badly.
Badly? How do you mean?
Well, she just took off and now she's not answering my calls. So what I want to know is, is there still something going on between the two of you?
How can you even ask me that? Mercy's a married woman.
I know. I mean, the way she reacted and everything, I have to know. She's my only real friend. I don't want to hurt her.
Tina, Mercy and I have a history. But that's all it is. History.
I just don't want to lose a friend.
Tina, listen. I really like you. I want to be with you. And Mars will come round. You will see.
Hey, isn't that Tandika on the TV? Excuse me?
Yes?
Could you please turn up the volume?
We are hearing that the Tandika Bridge has collapsed.
Huh?
The Tandika River broke its banks today after weeks of heavy rain.
Hmm.
At least 4 people are reported to have been injured.
Oh my God.
Police are urging everyone to stay away until the flood waters subside.
Great.
Reports from the meteorological...
Looks like we are stuck here.
I'm supposed to be at work at the radio station by 8.
And there we leave Dan and Tina trapped in the restaurant with the floodwaters rising. Don't miss what Nikki has to tell you in his video blog. Just click dw.de/LBE to watch it. Until next time, bye-bye.
And you can hear a repeat of that instalment of the Crossroads Generation on Thursday here on Africa Link. A reminder of our main stories before we leave you. There is guarded optimism in Addis Ababa that South Sudan's warring factions could reach a deal. Foreign journalists visiting Ghana are to face new restrictions. And we've also been hearing from Zimbabwe, where a Supreme Court ruling has led to thousands of people losing their jobs. Join us again tomorrow for more stories from the African continent. Remember our email address, feedback.africa@dw.com. Our postal address, Africa Link DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And our mobile number for your SMS is 491609575910. As always, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.